Welcome to Austin on the Air, candid conversations about air filtration and air quality and the impact it has on children and adults at school, work, and home.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Austin on the Air. I'm Anna Malaszewski with the marketing team here at Austin Air. We have a super exciting episode for you all today because I'm here with Oscar Sierra, a licensed acupuncturist and herbalist trained in Chinese and functional medicine and holistic oncology. Welcome, Oscar. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Okay. I'm Oscar, and I'm kind of a weird bird in that I straddle the worlds between art and science, Chinese traditional medicine, and modern functional medicine. I'm a fan of both. And for those of you that do just one or the other, that's cool too. I see my role, my dharma, if you will, in the universe to connect seemingly disparate worlds. And I mean and say seemingly because I don't think that they're as far apart as what one might think upon first glance. The art and the science, the traditional medicine versus the conventional medicine. So that's a little bit about me. I play music. I enjoy music a lot. And I try to find ways to connect, like I said, seemingly disparate things and disparate people with traditional, and by traditional, I mean things that have been around for thousands of years, with modern stuff that's pretty cool in a functional medicine and high-tech kind of way, with concepts that have been around for millennia.
Okay, awesome. So let's transition here. To give our listeners some context before we get into our discussion, can you explain the difference between mold spores and mycotoxins? Because this episode is primarily going to be focused on mold.
Yeah, so mold is a type of fungus, and fungus has been around for a very long time. They predate us, by us I mean animals, by a long time. And mold is one of the flavors down the phylogenetic tree of fungus. And fungus reproduces instead of like plants with, you know, pollen and anthers and stamens and, you know, male and female sexual bits from plants or animals. They have these things called spores. And spores are in the realm of matter in the physical realm. They exist. You can touch them. They are small. But if you had a microscope or sometimes even a magnifying glass, you can see them. They drop out of the bottoms of your shiitake mushrooms, and they're not categorically bad. They're just the way that they fungi use to reproduce. And mycotoxins are not necessarily in the realm of matter, and so something that you could touch or see. They could be gases, and they are what we call secondary metabolites, just like the way that polyphenols and flavonoids or alkaloids, say in your coffee, like caffeine, is a secondary metabolite to the plant making stuff. And it's called secondary because it's not part of its primary structure. So secondary means that it's used for something else, like defense, often cases, or, you know, to make animals either want to eat them or attract them, or not want to eat them, or, you know, turn predators away. So mycofungi, similarly, have these secondary metabolites to either attract predation so that they get eaten by the thing, then get pooped away 5 miles later so that they get to spread their species around the globe, or potentially to thwart predators. There are other reasons that you can make secondary metabolites, but basically secondary metabolites are neither categorically good nor are they bad.
So what are some places or environments or conditions that might be conducive, or like, let's say, a breeding ground for these mold spores, and then as a secondary result, maybe these mycotoxins?
So the mycotoxins come from the mold. The mold comes from, well, they've been there. Like I said, they were around before we were. And an environment that is, everywhere has mold and to some extent mycotoxins. So, you know, kind of like bacteria, they're neither good nor bad. It's just a matter of who, how many, and in what balance, right? With our guts. So we're now, you know, buying bacteria to take them as capsules to put them in our mouths or other places to, you know, to increase our health and vitality. So, you know, I don't want to poo-poo fungus, mold, or mycotoxins, but I will say that they're everywhere. And they like being in places that have two things in particular, carbon and water. So, you know, last I checked, we live on Earth, which is pretty much covered with carbon. And we live in an atmosphere that pretty much everywhere, even in the middle of the Sahara Desert, has some amount of water in the atmosphere. There's almost never zero humidity. You know, here in Atlanta, where I live, you know, we're coming up on summer, which is, you know, we're basically going to be swimming until September-ish or so. You're up in Buffalo, so it probably doesn't get quite as humid, but you're not far from the Great Lakes and, you know, they evaporate water. Even though it's not raining, there's some amount of humidity in the air. And last I checked, you know, anytime you wear clothing made of cotton or, you know, humans, of course, are made of carbon, and your quote unquote drywall is also made of carbon because it's covered in paper, and your wood or building materials, you know, short of cement are, so since people don't live in glass and stainless steel enclosures, we typically live where there is both carbon and humidity to some extent. And by humidity, it could be, you know, soaking, or it could be just, you know, 20% humidity in the air. So basically, there's just going to be some amount of fungi, including mold, and the mold then release spores, and they also release mycotoxins. So it's not a matter of if there is mold or mycotoxins or spores, it's a matter of how much.
So what are some signs and symptoms that might indicate possible mold exposure?
Okay, so that's a good, so everyone's exposed to mold all the time. It's inside of you and it's on you and it's outside of you. So I mentioned one factor, which is, you know, the environment. So how much carbon, how much humidity. There's another factor with regards to health. So you could be surrounded by mold, theoretically, and still have no signs or symptoms of it. And part of it is genetics, although not a whole lot. And part of it is just your immune system. So there is how balanced and stable and resilient your immune system is, and there is how much and what type of threats or perceived threats there are. And I mean perceived threats because some of these things are not. So for example, here in Atlanta, there's a lot of plants and a lot of pollen, and in early spring, everyone's cars get covered in pollen. And a lot of it is pine pollen because Georgia was, like most other states, leveled clear. So all the trees were cut down in favor of cotton and corn. And they planted, you know, this other pine tree, which wasn't the hardwoods that were here. So now everywhere is covered with, you know, these white pines, which weren't really always around, at least to the extent that they are now. So everyone is covered in white or yellow pollen, rather. And there are some that, you know, when the amount of pollen in the air goes up by 10%, they're sneezing and sniffling. And there are some, like me, that I could be covered in it and I could inhale it right up my nose like cocaine, or I could cover my face with it and I have no problem with it because I have a resilient immune system. And because pollen, pine pollen, is not a bacterial, viral, or fungal threat, there's nothing wrong with it. But our immune system perceives it as a terrorist threat and mounts an immune response, which looks like sneezing and coughing and mucus and histamine, so on and so forth. So there's two sides to every story. There is the how much is out there, which can be drastically ameliorated, mitigated by not having leaks and soaking stuff, and by having great products like an Austin Air. And there is then the other side of the coin, which is how resilient is the person or animal, you know, within that environment. So I think it's important to acknowledge that there's two sides to every coin. You know, there's the toxic exposure, and then there is the person and their resilience to it. The problem is that the signs and symptoms can be all over the place, from a rash to, I mentioned the classic kind of allergy, upper respiratory airway histamine responses where you get rhinitis and runny nose and watery and or dry eyes or irritated and or red eyes. My assistant here gets blotchy skin, like you touch her neck or something touches her neck, and it will become a hypercolor red spot for the next couple hours. Her daughter, when exposed to most people, they notice it because they start getting sick a lot, and or bacterial and upper respiratory airway infections. So the sign is that is indirect. They don't sometimes just notice the mold, mycotoxins, or spores. They notice the bacterial infections because their immune system is preoccupied, distracted, and weakened by these fungal agents, be it the mold itself, the spores from the mold, and or the mycotoxin farts from the mold. These are all triggering to some form or fashion to the immune system, and because your immune system is everywhere, and largely your gut, and that the sequelae from gut stuff goes everywhere, including your brain. You could have foggy headedness, which is one of the key things that is not always there, but it's usually there. And sometimes people don't know that they're a little spacey until they're not spacey. Until you put them in a clean environment and give them some herbs like bacopa or gotu kola or centella or lymphatics that basically help clear the toxic mold, mycotoxin, and or spores from their system. And then they kind of wake up and being like, wow, I feel really clear-headed today. I didn't know that for the last 6 months I've been kind of foggy, but now I can see the difference. It's kind of like the first time I put glasses on. I had no idea that everyone else could see that well. No clue. I thought that everyone's vision was normally blurry. I thought that, I didn't know. So it's kind of like a lot of people are not dead yet, but they're walking around foggy, tired, achy, nose watery, rashy, and because their leg didn't fall off there, and they weren't completely rendered useless. Especially if they're a guy, they're like, oh, I'm fine, don't worry about it. This is no problem. So the symptoms can be all over the place.
Let's say you're having a toxic exposure, you're having some sort of immune response to this mold exposure. And you investigate your home, and you find that there's a mold in your home that is becoming problematic for you. What should your next steps be from a health standpoint?
Well, the first thing is, as per the father of environmental medicine, the late great Walter Crinian, one of my dear teachers, was stop making it worse. So that's the first rule of medicine, is maybe you can't make it better, but you can at least keep it from making it worse. So by that I mean, fix your roof, tighten the plumbing underneath your sink, wipe down the black gunk around your bathtub. Clean your air. Go outside, where, by the way, there is plenty of mold and fungus, but the sky doesn't is diluted. So also, per the late great Walter Crinian, the solution for pollution is dilution. So whatever mold and mold spores are in there in the air, and they are, it's diluted by an entire Earth's atmosphere worth of sky. So it's relatively cleaner. Because there may be more mold outside your home, but it's diluted with, an entire atmosphere. So that's what you should do. Stop making it worse. Work with someone. I have some people here in Atlanta that I know and trust can go and identify what the source of the problem is. Basically where the water is getting in, into your home, into your closet, into your, where the source of the mold could be your food. So many, if not all, dried foods have some amounts of mold on there. It's just a matter of what type and how much. So rinsing your cashews, for example, If you eat cashews, especially if you think they're a nut, they're not. They are a fruit, which is relatively high in sugar. It doesn't make them bad, but it does make them dirty. And by dirty, I mean moldy. And by moldy, I mean also mycotoxins. So simply running your dried goods under some running water for 5 seconds mechanically brushes off the mold and or mycotoxins. And people say, "Whoa, well, I roasted my almonds prior to eating them, or I roasted my cashews. I killed the mold." No, the mold was already dead. Now you have a bunch of mold poop all over your cashews and your almonds. And now you have roasted mold poop. It's still there. You didn't actually remove it. The mycotoxins weren't alive to begin with, but they still cause problems. So I recommend cleaning your food slash environment and also increasing the resilience of your immune system. And these are simple concepts. It's simple in concept, but it takes a good bit of effort to do it.
Is there anything else you would like to touch on that I haven't mentioned today that you feel might be important in regards to this topic?
Yeah, that people should get tested before and after, both inside their environment. That is to say that I would recommend testing. Like I use certain lab companies to get a quantitative amount, get a number on their condition, as well as get a number quantitative wise and qualitative wise on their environment. So, for example, measure, what types of mold are around them, how much of those mold particles are around. So I don't do that. I collaborate. That's the name of my company, Sierra Botanica and Collaborative Medicine, with folks that literally go out to your house and get a read on these things, how much and what type, and they get a number. And then they do their work, and then good ones will come back and get a number. And if they did their job right, it was bad before, and then it's completely resolved, or at least a whole lot better once they finish their work. The same thing with me. I want to be held accountable. I want to get a number on how much mycotoxins you have currently, and or what is your immune resilience as measured by eosinophils in your CBC, your complete blood count, as measured by urinary mycotoxins panel, as measured by total IgE, immunoglobulin E, IgG, immunoglobulin G, C-reactive protein, LPPLA2, which can sometimes clue you in on immune activation. Get a run a organic acids panel to see what your toxic exposure looks like, what your glutathione levels look like. And so you get a baseline, and then you do some stuff. You do some stuff outside of your body, your home and your bathtub and your air and your water, and then you do some stuff to your inside environment. Nasal lavage, nebulizers, antifungal mixes for infections inside your internal body's home, as well as outside your home with that you collaborated with the guy that came out to your house, and then you measure again. So that way you can get to say, "Oh, well, Oscar's herbs didn't do a damn thing for my mycotoxin level or my glutathione levels or my inflammatory levels or my immune hypersensitivity levels, or actually they worked really well for these things. These things got a little bit better, but we need to refocus our energy on these other factors." So we can then hone in on how else we can make it better. But I am a firm believer that you should get a baseline as to what's up with your condition, environment, and constitution, and then do some stuff and then retest. And those can be high-tech things, and they can be also low-tech things like pulse diagnosis. How red are your eyes? How quickly do you sweat in an infrared sauna? Does your tongue look pale or pink or red? How is your energy level? How are you sleeping? So these are, subjective assessments as well as objective assessments. And you do before, you do some stuff, and then you do an after. And it's real simple. And you get to say, did it work?
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Austin on the Air. For more information on air filtration, air quality, and respiratory health, visit austinair.com.